Ezra chapter 2, we're going to be looking at the entire 70 verses in this, but I'm not going to read them all, certainly not with all the names that are in there. But this is a chapter of a genealogy. Now, genealogy, what's a genealogy? You kids might not all know what a genealogy is. It's important for us to know that. A genealogy is a list of names of your ancestors. A list of names of your ancestors. And one occasion when a genealogy is very important is if somebody has died and they're reading their will, and you are one of their ancestors, you want to make sure that they know you're one of his ancestors so that you can get part of whatever was maybe there for you in that will. I have to admit, genealogies can be on the boring side. To read through a genealogy, name after name after name, you think, oh. But you know, when you read through the Bible, there's lots of genealogies in the Bible, and they're there for a good purpose, because there's a very important reason why those people's names are there. You read some of the genealogies in the Old Testament, we're going to be looking at that today. Then there's genealogies in the New Testament. There's two of them dealing with the birth of Christ, important to show us his ancestry that traces back to the time of Christ, to the time of David and all the way back to the time of Adam. And so, important for having genealogies. And many times people today with genealogies, they may be a little bit interested in genealogies to just search out their family tree, maybe to see if there's any famous people in their ancestry. And if you think you have famous people that are back, you know, your great-great-great-great somebody's, you know, you might want to dig it out. But most of us probably don't have that in our ancestry anyway, so a lot of times we just look at genealogies as, you know, I take it or leave it. You know, I'm not real interested in reading genealogies. But as I said here in the Bible, some of them are very important. And if their name was not written in the genealogy, they would suffer a great loss. I've entitled the message tonight, "Is My Name Written There?" Is My Name Written There? And a very important thought as we look into chapter 2 of Ezra. And we find some interesting facts here about various categories of the people that remind us of, or at least remind me, of God's Book of Life. I want to make that parallel tonight. So let's take a look at this. Begin first of all that these were the children of the captivity. Now, if you look at our map here again, we look through this. You had the United Kingdom under Saul, David, and Solomon. Then the divided kingdom that started with Rehoboam and Jeroboam divided off all the way through here. The northern kingdom went into Assyria, into captivity, because they had drifted away from God earlier. Then 100 years or so later, the southern kingdom didn't learn from the mistakes of their older sister here, and they also went into captivity. There were three dispersions where they went to Babylon in 606, in 597, and in 536. Three different times. Sorry, 586. Yep. Couldn't see it from where I was standing. 586. So that wasn't right. Three different times when they went off into Babylon as captivities. The first one was when the royalty was taken. Daniel and some of the others that were in the royal family were taken then. 597 was another group of those that would have included probably Ezekiel and some others. And then the last one was when the city collapsed and they tore down Jerusalem, tore down the temple, and destroyed the city and took everybody captive. And so 70 years after the 606, 70 years later was in 536, that's when the first group came back. Now, when you think about that, it was 70 years from 606 when the first ones came back. That means the ones that left here in 586 were only gone 50 years. All right? So some of the people that we'll find in our list here tonight was probably among that last group that had only been there for actually 50 years, not 70 years. And so then we'll find there's other returns of later on with Ezra and Nehemiah, which were much later. But this helps us to see what is taking place here. So as we look at this here, each one of these who are involved in this genealogy tonight had lived in Babylon. And as you look at the little map here of the overview of the that country, you've got the Mediterranean Sea over here, and the Israel along here. Then way over here is Babylon. Assyria is all up in here in the top part. All right, so the northern kingdom went up into Assyria and dispersed. The southern kingdom came to Babylon, and then eventually came back. All right, so that gives us a little bit of an idea of what we're talking about here. These were those who had been among the captives. They were each the offspring of those who had been carried away by Nebuchadnezzar. All right, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had taken them away. And it's possible that a few of these old men were very young children. I mean, you think about that. They've been in captivity for 50 years. Let's say they were 10 years old when they left. They'd be 60 years old now. And they wanted to go back. They traveled back with them. Kind of a rough, long journey for older people. But some of them obviously did go back in that condition. And they went back as older people. And whether they were born in Israel or born in Babylon, they were still had one tie that tied them together. And that was their genealogy. They're all related to the same people. They're related to the Jewish family. They're all part of the tribes of Israel. And so the genealogy was very important for holding them together. And most of them had spent most of their lives in captivity in Babylon or Persia. But now they were coming back and they were united in their genealogy. They were all related in that sense. So the genealogy is very important. Each one of them had volunteered to return to Judah. Now as you look at the names that we find here in chapter 2, and I'm not going to take any attempt to read through all those names. Some of them are very difficult to pronounce, but we will look at some of the categories of the names. But all of these people here, they had volunteered to return. Remember Cyrus, he didn't say, all the Jews out of this country. Pack up your bags, you're leaving, you're going back to Jerusalem. He didn't say that. He said, anybody that wants to, you can go back. It's up to you. And so many did, but sadly many didn't go back. Many of them still stayed there in Babylon. Whether that was right or wrong, they didn't make that choice to go. And so God gave them an opportunity, and He was looking for those who would go back to serve Him. Now, there's great need in our world today, and we looked at that more last week as we looked at this. There's a great need. God's looking for men who are willing to leave home and leave their occupation and the comforts and their extended families and go and serve the Lord in a foreign land. And that's really what God was asking these people. They had grown up there in many respects, Babylon was home. And the thought of leaving there and going to some place where they'd never been, a land that had been torn down and neglected and grown over with briars and thistles and just a mess back in Israel, was not an easy thought. And so they were going almost like missionaries would go back. And God's looking for men who will do that today. There's a great need. You know, in our nation, the number one spiritual need in our nation, other than just revival of individuals, is a need for men to preach the gospel. There's a huge need for that. And there's a dire need all over the country for men who would be willing to step aside and leave their occupation and leave their location and go and many times take a cut in pay and serve the Lord. And there's a great need for that in the local churches for pastors. So both missionaries and pastors are a great need. And we ought not to be ashamed to step up and take that on. Because, you know, when we stand before God, you know, that's an important thing for us to remember. You young people that are, you're still looking at your future and wondering what you're going to do with your lives. And even some of us older ones. You know, when we stand before God, it's not going to make any difference at all. God's not going to be impressed if we say, God, I had this wonderful job. I was making, you know, $500,000 a year, and I was rich, and I had fame, and I had fortune, and I had all this stuff, and wasn't that wonderful? God's going to say, what'd you do for me? And if we didn't do anything for Him, all that we did here, all the fame and fortune, means nothing. You look at all these sports heroes that are making millions. When they stand before God, most of them don't know the Lord. And God says, say to them, I'm sorry, I don't know you. Depart from me into everlasting fire. It's not going to make one lick of difference whether they had millions stashed up, because they've lost it all. The only thing that really matters when we stand before God is what we have done for Him. So God's looking for those who will go and serve Him. But we find another thing here in the genealogy. The genealogy also determined their future. We see here in verse number 1 and 2 that a few of these that were in the genealogy were leaders. Okay? Verse number 1. Now these are the names... These are the children of the province that went up out of the captivity, of which had been carried away, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away unto Babylon, and came again to Jerusalem and Judea, every one unto his city, which came with Zerubbabel, Jeshua, Nehemiah, Shariah, Reeliah, Mordecai, Bilshan, Mizphar, Bigvai, and Reham, and Bena, the number of the men of the children of Israel. Right now, these were the leaders. These were the leaders among the people. Zerubbabel is mentioned here as the leader. Okay? So it says here that they came up with Zerubbabel. Now, who was Zerubbabel? Well, there's another guy that we already saw earlier in the first chapter named Sheshbazzar. Now, the king put Sheshbazzar in charge of all of the treasures from the temple and sent him back, and he was in charge of that. Many people believe that Sheshbazzar was another name for Zerubbabel. Can't prove it. Nobody knows for positive, but there's some good evidence that it might be that case, and here's why. Because he is called the governor. In Ezra chapter 1, verse 8, he's called in 8 and 11 and 5:14 and 5:16, he's called the governor that was appointed by the king. But we find also that Haggai chapter 1, verse 1 says that Zerubbabel was the governor. So was Sheshbazzar the governor, or was Zerubbabel the governor? It's possible that both were. It's possible that Sheshbazzar was the first governor, and then after he finished his term, then Zerubbabel became the governor. That is a possibility. But many Bible teachers believe that both of them were the same fella. And I tend to lean that direction, but we can't be certain, and it doesn't really matter. But we do know that Zerubbabel was the leader that is mentioned here, and then several other fellows who were under him were part of the leadership. So the first group that God mentions in this genealogy are the leaders. The second group he mentions are the common people. This takes up a bulk of the chapter, verse number 3 down to verse number 35. These were the common people, the everyday people. Each family head was listed and able to prove that his family, those in his family were their descendants. This is why the genealogy was important, because it showed their heritage. You know, there may have been somebody that says, "Oh, Zerubbabel, listen, my great-grandfather, he lived just north of Bethlehem, and he described this plot of land to me. There was a big tree in the corner, and there's this hillside, and it goes up, and then it goes down to the valley and around this way, and that was our family plot." And Zerubbabel would say to him, "Is your name in the book? Is your name written down?" "Well, I don't know, but I know Grandpa said that. It was true." Didn't matter what Grandpa said. If your name's not written down, no inheritance. It was important for them to have this genealogy, because the genealogy told them who's who and who belonged to who and whose land was whose. And so that helped them with this. The genealogy was very, very important to the people of the land. And so we see the common people are all listed here, name after name after name of their families, of the various ones in verses 3 to verse 35. Then there, down in verse number 36 to 39, we find there were a few priests that are mentioned. Verse number 36 says, "The priests of the children of Jediah, of the house of Jeshua, 973. All right, so then it lists off some of the priests. The priests, who were the priests? Well, the priests were of the family of Aaron. Remember, they were of the tribe of Levi. But specifically the family of Aaron. Aaron's family, Aaron was a Levite, and Aaron's family was set aside to be the priestly family. And so everyone who was born into Aaron's family was among the priests. So if you were born among the priests, then you had the opportunity to serve as a priest. Now this was very important to know that, because those that might say, well, I know my great-grandfather was a priest. Well, prove it. Well, I can't, but I know he was. The genealogy was important. They had to have that genealogy to be able to show that, because the priests were those who were able then to serve the Lord. They offered sacrifices. They worked in the tabernacle or temple, whatever the case may be. And anybody that was not a priest dare not do those things that a priest did. We see a couple of great examples of this. King Saul. King Saul was waiting for Samuel to come to meet him. And Samuel said, I will come and I'll pray for you in the battle, you know, that you're facing a battle here, and I'll pray for you, and I'll be there by this particular day. And Samuel hadn't come. The day was almost gone. It was getting near evening, and Saul panicked. And instead of waiting until the sun set and waiting for Samuel to get there, he said, bring the offering. I'm going to offer an offering. And he offered an offering that was only supposed to be done by a priest. And what happened? God said, that's it, Saul. You're done. That was one of the first things that happened in Saul's life that caused God to say, you're not the man that's going to stay on this throne. And he lost the throne because of that, and other problems as well. But that was the starting of it. Then we find another man. Remember Uzziah? Uzziah was the where do we have him on our chart here? Uzziah. Uzziah was a good king. Most all of his life, he reigned for 52 years. One of the longest reigning kings. Manasseh was the only one that reigned for 55 years. Uzziah reigned for a long time. But when he got near the end of his reign, he made a foolish mistake of going into the temple and saying, I'm going to offer the offering myself. And the priest said, no, no, don't do that. He said, step aside, I'm the king, I'm going to do what I want to do. And he did, and when he did, God struck him with leprosy. And so Jotham, his son, reigned as the king until Uzziah died of leprosy. So they kind of had an overlapping reign there for a few years toward the end, because Uzziah tried to do what only a priest was allowed to do. So it was very important that the priest knew who their family was and their genealogy. So these genealogies was extremely important for them, because the priests were allowed to serve in the worship services and also partake of the tithes. The people were to give their tithes, and then the tithes, much of their tithes in those days was brought in fruits and vegetables and produce and grain, and so they would be able to use that, and the priests were able to eat of that as their means of livelihood. But then we find another group in verses 40 to 42, and that was the Levites. The Levites. Now, the Levites were the children of Levi. They were the same family or the same tribe as the priests, but the priests were a family of the tribe of Levi, but the Levites were the rest of the tribe. And that tribe, as we saw in our quiz time tonight, was set aside. They did not inherit anything in the land. They were given 48 cities. And these cities and their suburbs were the places where the priests could live, or the Levites could live, but they didn't own any land. And so they were to live off of the tithes of the people as well. And that's why we find when the people of Israel got away from the Lord and they quit offering their tithes and their offerings and the sacrifices, and there was nothing there in the temple, then the Levites had a hard time. They struggled to make ends meet, to try to find food for their families, because they didn't have any funds. They didn't have any land. And so they struggled to be able to find. And I think that's why you see in the book of Judges there was a Levite that was wandering around looking for a place to live, to try to find somebody that would take him in and to help him out. And this is a sad story, but you know, it gives us a little bit of an understanding of what was taking place, and that was why. So these Levites, they were the priest's assistants. They worked in the temple as the assistants. So instead of the priest offering the sacrifices and that, the priest may need, oh, we need some more water for the laver here. All right, one of the Levites would go get that. Or they need some more wood for the altar burning. All right, the Levites would get that. So the Levites were the servants there that were working in there. And also when it came time with the tabernacle, when it came time to move it, the Levites were the ones that were in charge of carrying it, moving it, and setting it up and all of that. So the Levites had a very important part. And among the Levites were two special groups. One were the singers. Verse 41, the children of Asaph had 120 and 8. All right, so they were the singers. So they actually had a choir among the Levites. And a very important aspect of it. The choir consisted both of vocal singers and musical orchestra players. These were part of the Levites that were in charge of the music for the tabernacle and the temple. And so they had an important ministry. And they had to have their name written down if they were going to be one of the Levites. They had to be able to prove that. The all other ministry that the Levites had were the porters. The porters were the temple guards. They stood at the gates of the temple. Now, I'm not exactly sure what they were guarding for. Maybe they were making sure people didn't bring things into the temple that they shouldn't bring into the temple, or bring people into the temple that shouldn't come into the temple. Maybe they were watching for foreigners that may have been trading in the city and making sure they don't go into the temple. But these Levites, some of them were the porters, the guards, the guard gates, or gate guards that were standing at the gates of the temple, keeping charge of the gates. So these were the Levites. Then we find another group that is mentioned in verses 43 to 54, and that is the Nethinims. The Nethinims. Now, in my Bible, what I've done is I've taken a colored pencil and I highlighted Nethinim. I highlighted the Levites and the singers and the porters and the priests. And then it's easy to spot it as you look through your Bible. So it's a good thing to consider if you haven't done that. But the Nethinims. What were the Nethinims? Well, the Nethinims were people from a non-Jewish origin. All right, so these were not Jews by nature or by birth. But they were part of the nation as a whole. Very likely, these included the Gibeonites. Who were the Gibeonites? Anybody remember who the Gibeonites were? Remember when Joshua was conquering the land and they had just taken Jericho, they just took Ai, and they're starting to make their conquest, and news travels around that these Israelites are going to conquer the land and everybody's going to be wiped out and you're going to be killed, and the people panicked in the land. They were frustrated and panicked, and so the Gibeonites, they came up with this wild scheme to deceive the Israelites. And remember, they put on their old clothes and their shoes and their old food and their moldy bread and they tried to make themselves look like they were ragged and old, and said, "We came from a far, far country. We want to make a league with you." One of the saddest chapters in the Bible says that they took of their victuals and asked not counsel of the Lord. So what that means, they looked at all the food and stuff that they had and said, "Oh, those poor guys come from a far country. Wow." And they didn't ask the Lord, "Lord, what do you know about these guys?" They just said, okay, we'll make a deal. We'll make a league with you so we won't kill you guys. And then 3 days later, they found out that they were the neighbors. They had lied to them. But they had already made this promise. So now these Gibeonites are living among the children of Israel. They couldn't kill them because they had made a promise to them that they wouldn't. And so the Gibeonites were very likely some of these Nethinims. They were the temple slaves. They were the ones that had to cut wood and carry water for the temple. The Nethinims. Right? So these were among the people that were there. And again, they had their names written. That's interesting. Why would God care about these who were not even Jewish by nation, but he included them in the genealogy list? Then we find also the servants of Solomon's, or the children of Solomon's servants, verse 55 to 60, who were the children of the Solomon's servants. Well, children of Solomon's servants were also non-Jewish people, like the Nethinims, But it seems that they were from an inferior group, not as distinguished as even the Nethinims were. These may have been descendants of Solomon's personal slaves, the slaves that Solomon had in his court. I mean, he had a massive court and thousands probably of slaves and servants that are all over the place waiting on everything, doing. And many of these slaves were foreigners. And so these are the children of Solomon's servants, the Solomon's slaves. And yet God included their names in the list. Very interesting to think that. And then there were some, we see down in verse number 59, and these are they which went up from these places here, but they could not show their father's house and their seed, whether they were of Israel. All right, so there's also a group here that couldn't even show their identity. They said, we're part of you guys, but we can't prove it. Our names aren't in the book. So what were they going to do? Well, here's the solution. And I'm not going to read these names again because I'll choke over them. But you get down to verse number 63, at the end of verse 63, and it says, and the Tirshatha, that's the governor, or that was speaking of the leader of the nation there, said unto them that they should not eat of the most holy things till there stood up a priest with the Urim and the Thummim. All right, so remember the Urim and the Thummim? It was on the priest, in his breastplate, kind of a packet like that he had on his chest that had the jewels of the 12 jewels representing the nation on there. And in it was a pocket, and in the pocket of that was the Urim and the Thummim. Probably two different colored smooth stones, a black and a white, very likely. And when they were making a decision, they would pray and ask God for guidance, and God, you direct our choice here. And he'd reach in and he'd take out one. Black was for no and white was for yes, or something of that nature. So this was the Urim and the Thummim. So he says, you cannot partake of these things. You think you're a priest, or you think you're in this, and you know, you can't. We got to say no until it's proven by the priest with the Urim and the Thummim. So they would do this. So there was all of this was taking place here to sort out all of these complications. Not only this, there's one other group down in verse number 65 that is mentioned besides their servants and their maids. All right, so this is the whole congregation. Verse 64 was 40,360, besides their servants and their maids. This seems to be another group that was just the personal slaves of the people. They had slaves of their own. These are also mentioned. They have no rights, but they're still counted in the genealogy. Very interesting. God cared even about those people there. You know, if you had been among those that had traveled back to Israel, one thing that you would want is you'd want to make sure my name's written there. I want my name written in that book. I want to make sure that I don't travel all the way back there and get back there and they say, you're not part of us. No, they wanted their name written down. Now, that's very important. Now, with all those thoughts about their name written down and in the genealogy and the importance of genealogy, as I pondered over that, you know, the Lord reminded me, there's a parallel here between that and God's book of life. Think about that. God's book of life also has a list of names. So names that of God's book contains the names of all of His children. Now that's pretty important. We're not just talking about a genealogy to know whether you're a priest or whether you're a Levite, but a genealogy to say, are you part of God's family? Very important, because as we look at this, God says it's His book of the book of the living. Psalm 69 verse 28, the psalmist says, let them be blotted out of the book of the living and not written with the righteous. So he says the righteous here are written down in the book of the living. Later on we see in Luke chapter 10 and verse number 20, Jesus said to his disciples, notwithstanding in this rejoice not. The disciples had just gone out on this preaching trip and they came back rejoicing that the spirits were subject to them, and they did all these miracles, and Jesus said, notwithstanding in this rejoice not that the spirits are subject unto you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven. He said it's far more important that you rejoice that your name is written there Your name is on God's book of life. The book of Revelation mentions the book of life 7 times. A very important book to have our name written in. As a genealogy records the birth and death of people, so God's list names every person that has been born into God's family. And we need to ask ourselves an important question. Is my name written there? Your children need to ask that question. Is my name written there? Is my name written in God's book? And if our name's not written in God's book, we're in trouble. Just like these people back in Ezra's time, whose name was not written in their book, they said, we know that Grandpa said that was our problem. He said, it doesn't matter what Grandpa said. If you can't prove it, it's not yours. And so it is. You know, there's going to be people. Remember there in Matthew chapter 7? Jesus said, many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, you know us. And Jesus said, I'm sorry. Depart from me. I never knew you. And they said, well, we've done many wonderful works and cast out devils in thy name. And Jesus said, I'm sorry. I never knew you. Your name's not written down. And so this is very important for us to see. Our name needs to be written in God's book of life. The hymn writer James M. Black alluded to this heavenly list when he wrote the hymn that says, the trumpet of the Lord shall sound, and the dead and the time shall be no more. The morning breaks eternal, bright and fair. When the saved on earth shall gather over on the other shore, and the roll is called up yonder, I'll be there. When the roll is called up yonder, the roll. We've been to different things. I don't know that they necessarily do this in school anymore. But you know, the teacher or the instructor is reading the roll. Start reading off the names of the people. And he says, when the roll is called up yonder, I'll be there. That's what we want. We want our name written in God's book of life. And the book of life also determines our future. All those whose names are in the book of life will spend an eternity with the Lord. Revelation chapter 21, verse 27 says, and there shall in no wise enter into it, speaking of heaven, anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they who are written in the Lamb's book of life. God says, nobody's going to get in here except those whose names are written in the Lamb's book of life. Revelation 20, verse 15 tells us that those whose names are missing are going to be separated from God and sent to the lake of fire. Revelation 20, 15, and whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. So the question to ask ourselves tonight, is my name written there? Is my name in God's book? Do I have my name in the records of heaven? Child of God, born into God's family. If it's missing, for all eternity, you'll miss all that God has prepared and planned. Ezra's genealogy was a genealogy that contained the names of leaders and common people and priests and Levites and servants and even the slaves. The same is true about God's genealogy, the book of life. Contains the names of all sorts of people that have put their faith and trust in Him. The genealogy in Ezra's day included all those who were born into a family. God's genealogy, the book of life, includes all those who are born into His family. Those whose names were missing from the genealogy in Ezra's day suffered great loss. But those whose names are missing from the book of life will miss heaven and go to hell. We must each ask ourselves that important question, is my name written there? If not, it's still not too late. You can still become a child of God. The hourglass is nearly empty, but it's not too late yet.